Cloudcast Media presents from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome back to The Cloudcast. We're coming to you live from our massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And it is Aaron for a quick programming note for this week. We are starting our conversion of the podcast from audio only to include video as well. By the time this is out, or maybe shortly after, the main segment should also be published on our YouTube channel. Now, you'll see us phase this in over the next month or so as we convert all of our process and workflows to our new tools. You should also see and hear an upgrade in the audio quality of the interviews going forward as well. We're on a mission in 2024 to update your listening experience. And as always, we'd love to hear your feedback. So with that, let's move on to Cloud News of the Month for March.
And we're back. And Aaron, we are trying something new, man.
I know. After all these years of kind of having the same tools and the same workflows, we're branching out.
Yeah. Now we, we are actually recording this on April 1st. This is not an April Fool's joke. For the first time we're going to start doing this in video. And we talked about this a little bit on the year-end show about, you know, do we switch the show over to video? And I think while we got some feedback from a number of people that said, hey, you know, I listened to it as audio only, you guys don't need to do it in video. I think what we found is a couple of things. Number one is some of the tools that people are using to record podcasts as a combination of audio and video are vastly superior than everything that we've been using. So we're excited about trying to improve the quality of the show. But number two, we realize that we don't have to pick just one or the other. We can really kind of do a combination of both. So we will continue to publish the show through all the regular podcast channels as audio only. And then we're going to start using some of the video just because it does allow us to get into some new channels that allow us to grow the audience. And that's something we've been trying to do for a while. So excited about this new thing, man. You and I are going to have to make sure that we clean up and look decent for video.
I know. That was one of the other things, too. I was like, oh, gosh, we got to figure that out now.
Well, and I think the other thing we've been hearing as we've been doing guest shows as well is that our audience is constantly like, oh, we're only doing this as audio, because I think people have become so used to, you know, with Zoom calls and everything, they feel fine doing stuff as video as well. So we're going to start with that. So today's first show happens to be our Cloud News of the Month. So we're going to do Cloud News of the Month looking back at March of 2024. Do you want to jump in and get us started, man?
Yeah, I'll jump right in. So we've kind of, you know, it's funny, when we started this, we figured the format would kind of develop over time a little bit. And I think we've developed into this rhythm that has kind of gone into like, hey, let's do the old fashioned news. Let's do an AI speed round. And then let's hit a couple big trends.
Yeah.
And we didn't necessarily force them into like X number of trends every month, right? Like I think last month was a pretty busy month. And so we did like five trends. This month, it's a little slower.
Yeah.
I'd say
three
trends this month.
Right? Yeah, that happens. So well, why don't you jump in? You can at least take a few of the what we call good old-fashioned cloud news.
Yeah, absolutely. So good old-fashioned cloud news. And I'm not necessarily going to go into them a lot in super depth because there's actually, well, gosh, probably upwards of 10 of them right now. But we'll pick out a couple and we'll talk about them. But just to list them all here real quickly. Redis changes their licensing. In addition to that, Linux Foundation creates a fork off of that. SBF from the FTX fame, sentenced to 25 years in prison.
Not good. Kids
crypto don't. Crypto continues, but not FTX.
Bitcoin is up, and so is the years in prison for SBX or SBF.
Exactly. Observe raises $150 million in a Series B for more observability. And actually, instead of reading them, I do want to stop and talk about this one real quick. Because I was probably, of any of the old-fashioned cloud news ones, this one really, I'll say, surprised me. I won't say shocked, but surprised me a little bit that there's still money in observability and there's still hundreds of millions in observability. Yeah. What was your thoughts on that when you read it? I was like,
well,
huh.
I mean, first off, Jeremy Burton, who's the CEO, is a friend. You know, we're always excited when people.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yes, absolutely.
Always excited when folks get new rounds of funding. I was surprised for two reasons. One, It felt like funding just as a whole was sort of down. So, you know, good to see, you know, we're always happy to see funding or at least money flowing out of VCs into creators' pockets, but, or at least into their bank accounts. But I mean, it's one of those things where I think monitoring and observability, and maybe there'll be a future name for observability, it's something that's never going away. And I think it's a perpetual problem. It feels like it's never solved completely. And, you know, I think maybe there will always be funding for people who are saying, look, we think we've got a better mousetrap. And, you know, Datadog has had an incredible run for a while. I think they're continuing to do very, very well. But yeah, maybe there is some, I mean, Observe's thing is really sort of built on a very different data store. I mean, so they build on top of Snowflake. So, you know, there's some of that. There's some technology there. They're trying to do sort of an all-in-one, which is different. And I think they're starting to build in some AI stuff. So I imagine some of the VCs are looking at it and they're going, okay, maybe there is a different mousetrap that can be built.
Fair. Well, and you mentioned Snowflake. Snowflake relates to the next story. You want to go, Brian?
Yeah, so I don't know if we covered this last month. Their CEO left. He announced his retirement, which, you know, we were joking on one of the Slack channels that there should be like a whole conference for people who just decide like, hey, I've had enough as being a high level executive. I'm just taking the money and running, and I'm going to go hopefully just lay on a beach, which is kind of our ambition at some point in time. But yeah, Frank Slootman left not too long ago, a month and a half ago, and the market has just killed Snowflake.
It.
I mean, they're down like 35-40% or something like that, even though they've announced, you know, their earnings or numbers are pretty good and so forth. But yeah, they basically got sort of killed at the end of the pandemic because everybody moved from storing their data 5 or 6 times to we're only going to store it 2 or 3 times. So, you know, their revenues were down. And then, yeah, the market is essentially like, we're not sure who this new CEO is because the last guy was so good. So that one's going to be interesting. We don't like to sort of give stock picking advice or anything, but it doesn't feel like fundamentally Snowflake is a really different company.
Right.
So, you know, who knows? Maybe this is just a dip and an opportunity for them to come back.
Yep, absolutely.
Next couple that are on here are all sort of Kubernetes or CNCF related. So Kubernetes is celebrating 10 years. So 10 years. Do you remember the very first time we had like Joseph Jacks and there was another guy and they came on and they were like, hey, we're doing an event called KubeCon. And we're like, you're doing an entire event around a scheduler? Are you crazy? And now there's 12,000 people in Paris last week. We're at KubeCon. So, you know, they had some vision. Congratulations to them. But, yeah, 10 years of Kubernetes. KubeCon Paris had 12,000 or more than 12,000 people, so the biggest show ever. So that space is thriving, although, you know, we still wonder, you know, what exactly is driving it. But, you know, it does feel like it's sort of in the, you know, sort of stabilization stage and mainstream stage. So, you know, probably a lot more focus on customers, maybe less on some of the new incubating technologies.
Well, and I'll add this too. Maybe a quick opinion, maybe borderline hot take on all of this is, and it relates to another article that's in Cloud News, which is why Kubernetes needs an LTS, which I thought was a super fascinating article. But why is KubeCon so popular? Like, it really does feel like. This is putting a bad label on it, but it's become the premier infrastructure plumbing conference that, you know, VMware used to be it.
Yeah.
And all those people that went to shows needed somewhere to go. And so now they all go to KubeCon, right? Like the last KubeCon, I didn't go to KubeCon EU, but the last one I went to, it's like you go there and you see the same folks in the same booths. They're just working for different companies. Like a lot of folks have just migrated from one area to another.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch. I did a Sunday Perspective this past week on Broadcom and VMware, and it seemed to get a lot of traction from folks. It will be interesting to see if VMware continues to have their event. If Broadcom's like, nope, that's just another expense that we can get rid of. We sort of have captive customers. We can, you know, we can send a press release out with the new thing. So it'll be interesting. I will say for anybody who is a Kubernetes customer, we don't tend to do a whole lot of like plugging our day job. OpenShift, if you are interested in an LTS, has had Kubernetes LTS for 4 or 5 years, even though the community can't figure out how to do it. Red Hat has been doing it for 4 or 5 years, and they'll do like 3 or 3+ years LTS. So if you need that, just it's out there. You may not have to wait for the community to get it.
Yeah, and I'll just add this too. Like, it's a really good article to go read. It's really fascinating into all the reasons why and the release schedules, and it goes into a good bit of detail on all of it.
It's complicated. I mean,
here's the thing though. Like, I've talked to a bunch of customers recently about it again with my day job, and almost everyone universally, they're like, no, anytime we have to migrate, we just build entire new. We never migrate or upgrade anything. They just build new, move over. And I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. From being around Kubernetes for a while, there is two sets of kinds of people. There's the people that just blow up the cluster and move it over to a new one. And for them, they don't need LTS, but there are a lot of services that run your day-to-day life that are on clusters that are still, I mean, they are many, many, many years old. People upgrade the application, but they don't necessarily upgrade the Kubernetes, or they leave it for a long time. So yeah, it is the craziest thing. Like, we've talked about it forever. You know, VMware used to put out a release once, a main release every year, and then a minor every 6 months. So it was like maybe every 18 months you would touch your virtualization infrastructure. And Kubernetes came along and was like, nope, every 3 months you get a new release.
Boom.
So, boom. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think as far as good old fashioned news, I think we covered a bunch of stuff. I mean, basically it's like, you know, there's lots of projects that are still going through licensing changes. You'll see a few of them in there. HashiCorp went through it. Redis is going through it. I saw MariaDB is potentially getting acquired by a private equity company. So there's a lot going on in that space. And then the CNCF sort of, you know, has their, you know, one of their pillar things for the year. So it's good to kind of see. And all the videos from CNCF are already posted. So congratulations to that team for getting all those out so quickly.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, man. This is sort of your baby, the innovation speed round. What's new? You know, shoot. By the time people watch this, there'll probably be 25 other new things. But what's new in the AI space?
Well, and it's so funny too. You mentioned that because one of the articles, and actually, I put it in the Microsoft section. I literally popped it in before we hit record because this stuff is pretty amazing. How much there is, and this is just highlights, right? And this is where too, I would say, you know, tell everyone, you know, if you ever get really bored, go to the weekly, you know, Cloud News of the Week doc, which is, again, I don't know, it's up to 70, 80 pages now, where we just keep adding links that we find interesting week after week. But most of them are AI, that, like, we've already admitted on the Cloud News of the Month, and most of them are AI related. But so here's kind of the quick rundown and the quick speed round. There's a really good article, and it's a really long article, by the way, about the engineers that created the Transformer paper, the one that kind of changed all of this. And really, really good read. I would definitely recommend everyone go check that one out. Amazon seems to have picked, and we've talked about this before, picked their who they want to be investing in. They've invested in Anthropic. It's now up to almost $3 billion. Saudi Arabia, plans a $40 billion push, so sovereign investment into AI. There's also, this was interesting, good friends of the show, Acorn, Acorn Labs. We had them on not too long ago. And by the way, there is one or two folks out there too that still have, like, you know, listened to every show or plan to listen to every show. It's getting harder and harder with over 800 shows now. Hey, you don't need to listen to that one because they pivoted.
They basically came on and said, we're gonna reinvent PaaS. And then like 2 months later, they're like, nope, we're not doing that.
Yeah. So they released something called GPT script. So I imagine applying the existing technology, but more into an AI use case than a PaaS use case. And then as things always get smaller and easier, GPT-2 can now be squeezed into an Excel spreadsheet, which I thought was pretty crazy. And then CNCF publishes, and this is hot off the press, CNCF publishes a cloud native AI white paper.
Yeah. The buzz around KubeCon was everything was sort of AI platform engineering or something else. I think we're gonna talk about that in just a bit. I was sort of surprised that a few of the numbers, and this is the crazy thing, is like we're talking about numbers in the billions in terms of investment, but I was sort of surprised the Amazon investment in Anthropic wasn't necessarily net new. I mean, they had pledged, like, previously they were going to do $4 billion. Yep. And this was just sort of like truing up the previous four, you know, to get them to $4 billion. They didn't buy them. They're just sort of making yet another sort of tranche of an investment. I'm a little bit surprised. I don't know if I'm surprised or if it's something that we should keep an eye on, but like, it seemed fairly low to me, given, mm-hmm. given the stakes that are, you know, between, even between Microsoft and Google and AWS, it felt fairly low. And it is one of those things where you sort of wonder, does Amazon know something more than we do? Because they did come out maybe like a week or so ago, and Adam Selipsky sort of said, hey, we've got, you know, X thousands of people using Bedrock, or are they, you know, a zero behind the level of investment they've got to make? I think it's an interesting thing to look at. The other thing that was interesting, I thought the Saudi Arabia number, I mean, you know, Saudi Arabia has this gigantic wealth fund, sovereign wealth fund. I thought $40 billion seemed a little bit low, because I think they are trying to, from what I've heard, they are trying to become like a third place where chips are being built. Obviously, you know, they're, you know, trying to reestablish something. They know that what's going on in APAC has concerns with what's going on in China. The US has to figure out how to build up manufacturing again. And they have so much money, and $40 billion actually seems sort of low, especially when you consider that, like, the folks that run, what's the Japanese, SoftBank is talking about, like $100 billion. And, you know, we talked earlier, like Sam Altman's throwing around some $7 billion number, which, or $7 trillion number, which seems, you know, obscene, but $40 billion seems sort of low for, you know, if they're really trying to transform from being completely oil-based, or, you know, petroleum-based to something completely different. But yeah. I don't know, maybe just me.
No, it makes sense. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right, let's get into it. We got three trends this month. Yep. Which one do you want to jump on first?
Let's do KubeCon. I mean, we already talked about it a little bit. Let's kind of do, neither of us were able to make it, first of all. But you know, some kind of outside reflections. I'm sure you have some impressions there or everything. I will simply say, again, we talked about it, more than 12,000 employees, or attendees, sorry. Did it feel a little bit like AI washing?
I think,
what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, people came back to it and they said, hey, there was, you know, there was a lot of AI talk. I think the reality is, you know, and people can get cynical about this or not, like this year, every keynote is going to be, at least the day one keynote, is going to be dominated by AI. Because if you don't come out and make a statement about where you are, right? Like, so, you know, this is the yin and yang of timing of big events and so forth. Like, you could say, well, last year, you know, AWS did a lot at reInvent. Well, that was in November, right? If you had missed that cycle, right? Because remember, like, it was sort of like the March, April-ish timeframe was when ChatGPT sort of blew up for the world. And then, you know, it's been going on. So they missed the AI cycle last time with CNCF. There wasn't necessarily like a lot to talk about. So you really had to, make some sort of statement. You had to give people some sense of it, because to a certain extent, you know, the CNCF and the CNCF community is competing for people's attention. And if they're perceived to be like, well, you're just the infrastructure people, or you're just the Kubernetes people or whatever, you do run the risk that people are going to be like, oh, they've immediately overnight become irrelevant. And, you know, I think the reality is, like, tons of this AI stuff does run on top of Kubernetes. There's schedulers and some advancements that have been going on in this space. It's probably good to have folks like NVIDIA showing up and infusing some new ideas and capital and other stuff. So I don't worry about it being washing so much. It's just being like, this year, you're going to hear about it. You can put whatever filter you want on as to whether you think it's BS or not BS, but like, you're not going to get around that, right? So, you know, just sort of expect that's coming. And it'll be interesting to see where, you know, how the CNCF adopts to this, because I don't know of any like net new projects that'll probably drop into the CNCF for AI, but it'll be interesting to watch.
Agreed. Yeah. I didn't have much to do with it. I hit a huge work deadlines for our, you know, our user conference coming up in May.
Right.
And it was like all the presentations were due and I was track lead, and I was like, oh man, I just don't have time to keep up with it this year.
Yeah. There's a really good write-up. We've got a link in the show notes. You know, somebody basically went through Daniel Bryant, who's been around the CNCF for a very long time in a lot of different areas, infrastructure, developer stuff and so forth. He wrote up a really, really good kind of a summary article. It's probably 4 or 5 pages long, but it kind of walked through, yes, the AI stuff, but sort of everything else and sort of where the highlights were and where areas are expanding and not expanding. So definitely worth a read if you, you're trying to get a good sense of what happened at KubeCon Paris.
Nice.
What's next?
Microsoft.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, we've talked about it a little bit before, but I think the trend continues. Microsoft is really branching out from just OpenAI as a partner. A couple, you know, 3 different proof points on that this last month.
They did an interesting thing.
Yeah, they acquired Inflection AI, which really, you know, brings in a team that's going to run almost consumer level AI, right?
Right.
And then we can break these down a little bit more. But then I thought this was super interesting. They hired a new head of AI. So basically, you almost think of it as like when the OpenAI and Sam Altman stuff, you know, kind of all went to crap and Satya was potentially going to bring over Sam as head of AI. Well, that they decided not to, you know, keep that seat warm for him. They actually went and hired somebody.
Well, the nuance of this one is so. And we talked about this last month as well, right? So last month they made the investment in Mistral. And so that was sort of the first time they were like, hey, we need to hedge our bets. This company, so Inflection AI and the hiring the new head, those things are connected. So Inflection AI was this sort of consumer chatbot sort of company. And there's, we'll put some links in the show notes. There's some really interesting behind the scenes of like who was their investor, and they had bought like 24,000 GPUs for this consumer service without really ever scaling. Like it was a weird investment. I think NVIDIA is an investor as well, but they basically hired the guy who was running it, who was had been a big deal over at Google Brain, and so he's now in charge of consumer AI for Microsoft. Now, what that means, whether it's like Xbox or tied into GitHub or whatever, it does sort of show them realizing like it's not just technology. Like you almost have to like buy the teams of people, and there's such a small number of people. They're all either ex Facebook or Google people. And so he's now the head of AI for consumer. Now, it'll be interesting to see at some point, like, does that sort of merge together with the stuff happening in Azure, and is Azure considered consumer or enterprise or whatever? But
right.
They continue to put their money where their mouth is. Now, you know, whether or not they've overinvested, as we talked about, you know, Amazon's level versus their level will be interesting. But it's this is like a big game of what's the board game that's all about war, where you're just trying to take people's land.
Risk going on right now. Yeah. Well, and along the lines that you mentioned about building, the last article in this too, in this trend, is Microsoft, and this just happened, or I just put this in right before we hit record. Microsoft might be building a $100 billion supercomputer for AI. I think it was Stargate. Was that the nickname of it? I apologize. I didn't click into the link. Let me do it real quick. Yeah. Stargate. So, I mean, hey, who knows? You know, now we're measuring supercomputers in hundreds of billions, which is a little crazy to me.
Well, that concept is again, it seems like it's another hedge, because on one hand, you've got NVIDIA, which we'll talk about next, has been talking about, you know, the gigantic NVIDIA systems, and NVIDIA keeps talking about, we're not a chip company, we're a systems company. I mean, that does almost feel like Microsoft is going, we need to be smarter about what these larger systems look like, because it's very possible that either we have to run them highly efficient, or our customers are going to ask us to build that for them. So, you know, $100 billion seems like a gigantic investment, unless they're, you know, specifically going after like something like search. But, you know, the idea of building large scale systems to hedge against NVIDIA or to potentially be a supplier for your customers doesn't seem, you know, like way out in left field.
Yeah. And they say this could launch as soon as 2028.
Yeah.
And what I picture for those, you know, science fiction fans out there who watch the Westworld show on what used to be HBO, I just picture one of the seasons, I think it was maybe fourth season, they had this like entire building, and it just had this big red glowing ball inside it. Like that's what, and it was like the, it was their artificial intelligence that ran the world basically.
Well, and
I feel like that's what they're trying to build here.
You would think you literally need a nuclear power plant right next to this thing to generate enough power for it, right?
Yeah. Which is an article we added in the past. They're actually exploring exactly that. So maybe it is all the threads coming together.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of big thinking happening at Microsoft these days. All right. Last trend. NVIDIA had their GTC event, which it was interesting because I have never really followed this thing because for the longest time, NVIDIA to me was always about gaming, you know, up until really like this last year or so. It was like, yeah, they do GPUs, but the use case is always sort of gaming and stuff. And so I didn't really pay attention to it. Did you see like what GTC looked like? It looked like a Taylor Swift concert.
Oh, yeah. And I had known about them in the past, but again, it was gaming or it was the VDI and EUC, you know, those were the two experiences I had with NVIDIA previous to this. But yeah, suddenly this is like, again, we're talking about trade shows and, you know, conference seasons and all that. I mean, this is suddenly one of the trade shows to be at now. And it's a pretty amazing event. And it almost reminds me of the old splashy days, right? Of like when you had lots and lots of production go into some of these trade shows. And I think as budgets tightened up, it's some of it left, but NVIDIA, they did it up.
Yeah. I tried to keep up with that. I watched a few of the things. I watched some of the keynotes and so forth. And it seems to me there's two sort of schools of thought. There's the school of thought. I mean, what I mean by that is like people writing up summaries of it and so forth. There's the ones that are like breathless over, wow, this is really big and this is amazing and so forth. And they tend to be focused on, I think what NVIDIA did is they said, this is our moment to sort of kind of reinvent themselves as being like our use case is AI, as opposed to in the past where I think they were always kind of trying to find a use case, you know, or you know, find a mega use case. And so, you know, apparently what they did was, you could look at the announcements and so forth, and they're interesting. But what they tried to do was sort of be like, the world of AI now resides with NVIDIA, right? They wanted to put themselves at the center of the earth. And so there was a lot of people that were sort of, you know, their write-ups were like breathless. They were like, oh, look, they're doing cars and they're doing robots and they're doing healthcare and they're doing all these things. And to a certain extent, like those were there, but not as in depth as people kind of made them out to be. And then there was some really interesting write-ups. Ben Thompson had a really interesting one. I put a link in the show notes. Ben Thompson's the guy who runs Stratechery, does a lot of coverage of like chips and hardware and stuff, as well as some other internet stuff. And he had a really interesting take that up until now, so everyone thinks of NVIDIA as being like this GPU company, which obviously they are. And right now they're sort of cornering the market because there's short supply. But he said, you know, their moat is really, it's been this thing called CUDA, which is their software stack, basically. And he said, up until now, there's never been anybody who's ever looked at CUDA as an external competitor and said, we should try and build like an alternative to that or like an open version of that, because it just, you know, it was kind of niched to gaming or niched to certain, you know, certain kinds of use cases, but not massively horizontal. And his argument was basically, NVIDIA is a big dog right now, and they're kind of setting the world on fire. But the level of competition that they're going to have around CUDA for people that are like, we cannot let one company dictate what this looks like, is going to be really interesting. And that was kind of his take, is like they've unlocked the market to now go after their biggest moat. And it'll be interesting to see if whether it's like a bunch of open source, you know, projects or, you know, one or two companies or even one company trying to build an alternative. Because if you look at all their announcements, they're all tied to, we only run on with this hardware. And if we've seen anything about the internet over the last 10 or 15 years, like that is like the magnet. That is the, you know, the mosquito, the moth to the flame, if you will, for competition.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and part of it too was, I mean, their latest, the latest GPU, the Blackwell GPU, $30,000, right? And so like, again, if you're an NVIDIA investor or an NVIDIA fan, hey, this is amazing. But if you're outside looking in, like there's so many people now either trying to build competitive GPUs or something that is a chip that's not a GPU, but is, you know, specialized for AI or all these other things.
Right.
There is so many competitive forces coming from so many different directions.
Yeah. I mean, it is one of the fascinating things about our industry, and what makes it really interesting is anytime you put a large bag of money out somewhere, I mean, just everybody. And I mean, it's, you know, what's the old saying, like one person's profit is the next person's business model.
Yep.
I mean, that's everybody is. Everybody's looking at Jensen Huang. They're jealous of his you know, coat, you know, rack full of black leather jackets, and they are coming to, you know, and everything's going to be timing, because the stuff they've built has been built up for a long, long time. So,
yeah, they played a long game and they're reaping the benefits of it. But now it'll be interesting to see how quickly the bullseye moved to them and right. how long they can keep it up.
Well, and I think that the other thing is, like, timing is always everybody's worst enemy in technology, right? Like, the longer you can't manipulate the market or shape the market to your will, or, you know, invent new things. And I mean, they've got a market who is sort of captured. Everybody wants their GPUs, but like, if you can't get them for a couple of years, like, it does create a lot of people going like, well, what alternatives available to me? Cause nothing isn't an acceptable answer. And so, like you said, like, I think we're going to find, maybe not on purpose, but just out of necessity, you know, what do they call it? It's the innovator's dilemma, right? It's the, you know, I'm going to build from the bottom. It'll be limited feature set, but it's cheaper. It's simpler, right? It's the stuff that Clayton Christensen has written about for years and years. So it's going to be fascinating stuff. So yeah, not a super, super busy March. I mean, like you said, it felt a little more balanced of cloud and AI and so forth. So that's a good thing. Any last thoughts for March now that we are into April and it's starting to warm up everywhere?
Well, we got to talk about basketball. I mean, for all of our non-American fans or non-sports fans, we have to apologize real quick, but we do have to talk about March Madness.
Sorry about your team, man.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. But I mean, it's a pretty crazy tournament.
It is a crazy. Well,
and a lot of great basketball going on this year.
Yeah, and the local team, NC State here in Raleigh, made it to the Final Four. They are the Cinderella for this year. So that's kind of cool. You know, just for the local area. So yeah, I think we're getting into Q2. Q2 is going to be, you know, we'll see earnings here in a few weeks for what Q1 looked like. Q1 always seems to set what people's Q2, 3, and 4 budgets look like, depending on how well or not as well as it went. So I think, you know, while the first quarter is always a little bit slow, I think we're going to see a little bit of buildup for April and May. Summer will be summer, as it always is, and then it'll probably be sort of fast and furious for Q3 and Q4. So, but this video thing's not so hard, man. I think we can do this. I
think you think so? We'll see.
I think we'll give it a try.
Nice. We haven't published it yet, so this may be one we bury. You never know.
But I mean, the good news is lots of smart people are making these tools easier for us. So yeah, you'll start to see these on the TikToks and the Instagrams and the YouTubes and all the other places. So especially YouTube, we've always had a really good following on YouTube. We just kind of stopped publishing stuff. So maybe it'll follow us along. So if you like video, hopefully you like this stuff, and we'll snip it up into some things and go from there. So welcome to what Cloudcast sort of 2.0 in terms of our media profile. Still doing audio, but you know, now with more pixels.
Yep, exactly.
All right, man. We'll wrap it up, folks. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Thanks for telling a friend about the show. And hopefully, if you are still in the bracket, hopefully your teams do well in the Final Four, and we will talk to you next month.
Thank you for listening to the Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.